There was a rumor out that he had been married as a young man and that his wife had been killed during the war by the Nazis. And of course, the Vatican, with vehement outrage, denied the rumor, as if even to think of the possibility that the Pope had been married was a scandal. The rumor, as it turned out, was untrue, but one does wonder why the Vatican was scandalized by it. After all, the first Pope was married, and we have evidence for it in today's gospel incident with Peter and his mother-in-law. There is no way that one can have a mother-in-law and not be married. Now, just as Jesus worked his first miracle in Cana at Galilee to keep a wedding party from becoming a failure, we could say that he worked the miracle in Peter's household to make sure that there would be somebody to cook supper for them. We're almost tempted to say, that poor woman, one minute she's in bed with a fever, and the next minute she's up getting a meal. Women today particularly would sympathize with her. There's simply not much time for convalescence. When the family is there waiting for their supper, out of the sick bed, into the kitchen. That apparently is what the world expected then, and what it still expects today from a wife and mother. And oddly enough, at least in his own time, Jesus apparently put up with it. And maybe Peter's mother-in-law, being a good Jewish mother, was the kind of woman who would even say to Jesus at the table, "Now eat your chicken soup. It's good for you, young man." Still, presumably, Jesus and all of his friends who were gathered there had to eat supper. Somebody had to cook it. And unless Peter's mother-in-law was really a gourmet cook and enjoyed this kind of work, we presume that there was a good deal of drudgery and monotony involved in cooking that daily meal. Even if it just happened that the guest of honor that time was Jesus himself. The Lord was able to work miracles, to cure fever and blindness and deafness, sickness, and other kinds of misery that afflict our human condition even today. But apparently Jesus was not able to eliminate from life that less dramatic but more universal misery that comes from having to live with routine, monotonous work. That kind of work with which all of us are stuck as long as we live here on earth. Even if we do recover, perhaps even miraculously, from an illness, the routine work is still there. In fact, it is simply piled up on us while we were sick. And even in our own day, with all of its labor-saving devices, there's still a tremendous amount of drudgery in the life of a woman who's a homemaker. Now, whether or not there is less in the world of business or other occupations is a judgment that must be made by those people who have experience in both worlds, the home and the work outside of the home. There's a tendency today to deny that there's monotony and routine and drudgery in the so-called glamorous world outside of the family. But those people who have no axe to grind will admit that there are very, very few jobs today that do not have long periods of time when the work is anything but self-fulfilling. That great catch-all work today for human satisfaction. And so whether it be today in the home, the classroom, the office, the factory, the hospital, the law court, boredom, routine, drudgery are simply inescapable. However spectacular the signs and the wonders that Jesus did, however spectacular today's labor-saving devices are, somebody still has to pick up the kids, cook dinner, wash the dishes, read the reports, dig through the law books, visit patients, correct papers, attend the next committee meeting, a wellspring of a form of drudgery that would never even have been thought of by the people in Jesus' time. We ask if Jesus was so good at working miracles, healing the afflictions of the human condition, how come Jesus did not get rid of drudgery for us? The answer is that Jesus came to heal us from our sinfulness and to promise eventual healing from all suffering. But he did not come to instantaneously transform the common lot of humankind. It is not yet time for heaven here on earth. It is not yet time for what we call the parousia, the final coming of the Lord. It is not yet time for the total triumph of good over evil. And until then, drudgery is simply going to remain a part of our human condition. You can no more escape it than Jesus was able to escape Calvary. In fact, we could say that it is a little bit of a part of Calvary in the part of the lives of each of us each day, that we must simply spend a certain amount of time each day doing things that are not only unfulfilling, but are really a pain in the neck. The issue is not whether we can escape drudgery, but whether, despite the fact we have drudgery in our lives, we are still able to transcend it and maintain some kind of cheerfulness, some hope, maintain our good disposition, our faith, our confidence, our affection. We have the words of Job, which is a story that you should all read, the story of which we heard a small portion in today's first reading, in which Job says, "Is not a person's life on earth here a drudgery?" It could be part of the attitude that we take. The comedian, who now in his mid-80s, George Burns, is still filled with a great deal of zest and optimism and vigor. And he says the way he has arranged it, or his attitude, is that upon awakening each morning, he feels so good because of his attitude that he sings three courses of Honeysuckle Rose. First, after his morning exercises. Then he sings a second course after he has his orange juice and dry cereal, because he says when he chews on the dry cereal, it sounds like applause. And that's the second course. Then he says, "I pick up the morning newspaper and I turn to the obituary page. And if my name is not there, I sing the third course of Honeysuckle Rose." Now, if we read to the very end of the short story in the Old Testament entitled Job, we discover the reason for thinking of life as total drudgery is that as his troubles came and went, he was always asking why and constantly challenging God rather than listening, trying to discover how he could become more mature by accepting the events that came into his life and growing because of them. At the end of the story, we discover that Job himself, after this agonizing period of self-examination, which makes up the entire story, he ends up learning how to sing at the beginning of each day, because he finally discovers the secret of placing his life, his each day, his future, in the hands of the Lord, who has given him each day to live by. Now, like Job, each one of us is a victim of suffering and defeat. And all of us have a temptation to challenge God and ask, why do we have to put up with this? Like Job, as we grow older, as we mature, somewhere along the line we learn the secret that eventually we learn how to live day by day and to trust in the Lord's promise that there is some mysterious meaning to our work and the suffering that goes with it. That in some mysterious way our fulfillment is being worked out according to a divine plan that in no way are we able to understand now. And like Job, we gradually learn to believe that whatever does happen in our lifetime, we do not live in vain. And like Job, we are able finally to come up singing, not because we understand, but because like Job, we learn how to accept in faith. And that's what Jesus says today in the gospel. He calls us and says, follow me. Look deep now into your own heart, to your spirit, and discover there always the little spark of hope that my Father has planted there, which is never going to die. Accept my Father's love for you. That is your very reason for being here now, to live and move in his being. Accept that in faith, for that power surpasses all human understanding and gives meaning to each day of your life.